It's been almost 3 months since the deadly Safeway shooting in Tucson, and one aspect of that shooting is being debated in Arizona. Lawmakers there are asking, should colleges be required to file reports with local mental health agencies whenever a student or faculty member is suspended or expelled because of threats of violence? You may remember that Pima Community College had banned the shooting suspect, Jared Loughner, saying he had to see a mental health professional. He never did, but Pima also never told anyone about their concerns, and later defended that by saying that Loughner wasn't violent, he didn't threaten anyone, although he did have disruptive behavior in the classroom. But should that have been reported? And might there have been more action if the school's crisis team was in place? The team that was supposed to help troubled students at Pima had only met for the first time the same month that Loughner was suspended. And Pima doesn't offer mental health care on campus. In fact, most community colleges don't have clinics, although most do have counselors to help people in need. We're going to speak to one in a few minutes. But first, let's spend a few minutes today on what colleges confront. With Thomas Robbins, he's chief of police at Boston University. We're located on the BU campus, and he's on the university's crisis team. Chief Robbins, you and other school officials meet when needed to talk about troubled students brought to your attention by other students or faculty. Then what?
What we will do is, first and foremost, assess the need for services to that individual or individuals. Are they in a crisis mode? Because if they're in a crisis mode, we'll respond in a crisis mode, meaning if they're in threat of harm to themselves or others, we'll get emergency help to them.
Well, a lot of people have questions about this. You know, what constitutes problems, especially in college, you know, when there are a lot of kids, you know, their hygiene goes, which is, you know, sometimes a sign of a mental health issue. We had somebody write and say, you know, I used to sort of like edge along the wall. You know, I was weird. What about somebody who's just weird? Do you aggregate that too, just in case?
What we'd do is we'd take that information, and we won't dismiss that, even if it's only one time.
Yeah,
what we'll do is, because a lot of times it could be the stress of a test, it could be a family situation we're unaware of, and we can really dismiss it that way. But we don't want to ignore it.
Well, because then the next time you don't have anything in your files. And we understand you use an online threat assessment tool. It's called Mosaic. 25 colleges use this. You take collected information and put it in this computer software, and then what happens?
Well, it results in a score. Now, the score is not a predictor. The score is based on similar behaviors in the past over thousands of cases that have resulted in violence. So it compares them to those cases, and it gives us a score so that we as a care team can make a decision with that piece of information and all the other pieces of information.
Well, now we understand that the Virginia Tech shooter, after the fact, when information was put into this machine, he scored very high on it.
Right, and I think he had troubling history when he was younger through high school, and that information was never relayed.
Well, but then what do you do once you decide, as they did at Pima, and they do at many colleges, this person does have to leave? Because the big criticism in just telling someone they have to leave the school is that the problem doesn't get addressed. That person can come back to your school. What do? You contact off-campus police?
We do. If we have some information that we've gathered, say this person might be a threat, this person has the means to carry out the threat, i.e., a license to carry a firearm or something, we've identified that he's purchased a firearm and stuff. But there are certainly considerations that we want to make sure that we don't breach the confidentiality in terms of behavioral medicine or anything that the administration does. So there certainly are considerations, but for the police department, it's the community safety that we're most concerned about.
We've read about a lawsuit by a student at Valdosta State University in Georgia. He said he was wrongly expelled by an intervention team there. He wasn't expelled because he was dangerous, but because he protested campus construction. He won in court. So it sounds as if you very much want to make sure that this person is really having mental illness issues and it's not just some disagreement?
Absolutely. You want to make sure from a police perspective that this person is not so much mental health issues. I'll leave that to the behavioral medicine and the experts. But is this person, based on careful consideration of behaviors that other people have witnessed and expressed to us as a team, gathering all these information points and at some point running a mosaic, is this person, we feel at this point, a threat to our community? And if the decision is, then the administration says, okay, we're going to say, look, you need to separate from the university and do X, Y, and Z and then come back to us.
Well, that's what happened at Pima. And we understand that in Arizona, by law, they also had the option to go to court, to take Loughner to court, and to say that they felt that he needed to be committed. But that required the school to get involved in that. I guess my question is, do you do anything other than say you have to go and get mental health before you come back? Have you ever considered we have to follow this and we have to, you know, we have to be involved here to keep people safe?
We certainly would. But as far as involuntary admittance to a facility, we have done that.
You have?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what we're talking about.
For psychiatric reasons, absolutely. We have, on the spot, taken people for help.
Have you ever sent any of your staff, police, to go, let's say, sit and observe, watch a student in a classroom?
We have done that. We've received calls from a couple professors who have said, we got a big exam coming up and he's acting a little bit irrational and I wonder if I could just, for this period, have someone sit in there. So we've done that.
Yeah. I don't want, and I'm sure you don't want to be judging another school. And you just shook your head, no, you don't want to. But I'm just going to ask you, do you think Pima, which had its intervention team, it was brand new. We know that it had sent police to classrooms when Jared Loughner was alleged to have disturbances, sent police to his home when he was suspended to explain that the school wanted him to go to a mental health program, but didn't take another step, which you've said your school has taken, had him committed. Do you think they made a mistake?
What I will say is that it's very easy for everybody across the country to look back and say, well, you saw this, you saw that. It's connecting the dots that is difficult. And I think this university understands that here at Boston University, and we try to connect the dots really well. There's no roadblocks that go up. The issue that's difficult and everyone is struggling with is that people are very mobile. People, you know, go to different cities, different towns, different states, and the criminal justice system does a very good job once you're on record, once you've been caught and arrested. But it's those people that don't have the criminal record and are experiencing these troubling thoughts and going to now carry out this threat. We don't have that kind of information database, nor do I think we could realistically imagine that we could collect some type of information that would make any sense in that regard, unless it was confined to a specific local area, and I don't know if it would be effective.
That's Thomas Robbins, Chief of Police at Boston University. Chief Robbins, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
We're talking about how colleges handle mental health care. Daniel Hess is Director of Counseling Services at Concordia University. That's in St. Paul, Minnesota. And he joins us from Minnesota Public Radio. And Dan, we should say Concordia doesn't have that danger assessment software we just heard about that tracks kids who need help. But there are surveys. So give us a sense. What is the need for mental health care nationwide?
There are a number of surveys that are sent out asking counseling center directors about what's going on their campus. When asked, do you believe if the number of students with severe psychological problems on your campus has increased in the past year, 71% answered yes.
Why do you think that is?
Well, just in the last decade, treatment for serious mental illness has dramatically improved, allowing students who in the past wouldn't have been able to enroll and achieve academically, they now have the capacity to find their potential as students. Mental illness is also being caught and treated more effectively sooner. And then support systems and accommodations are improving, ever improving on college campuses.
Well, let's get closer to, you know, the issue of severe mental illness. Have you seen a rise in that, in the kind of student that makes other people uncomfortable? And what do you do when that happens?
And this is just anecdotal, but I would agree that there is a noticeable increase in the numbers of students who are struggling with significant or serious mental illness on campus. It's not illegal to be odd or to make other people uncomfortable. In fact, that's even part of the function of attending university, is to be exposed to new people and new ideas. The challenge is to try to discern odd behavior that is, or eccentric behavior, from something that might be more serious. We're limited by some legal mandates that prevent us from intruding into students' lives where they haven't voluntarily sought help. We are only allowed to violate confidentiality if an individual is imminently and realistically a danger to themselves imminently a danger to someone else, or if they're gravely disabled. And that would be if, because of a mental illness, they're not able to feed themselves, clothe themselves, or seek shelter. And there's no one there to help them do those things.
Well, we read that 41% of counseling center directors in colleges wouldn't notify anyone about a suicidal student without a signed release from that student. Have you ever had a student that you were all worried about but felt that you couldn't do something because of confidentiality and then something happened?
Frequently, to the first part of your question, but then, and something happened? No, not very often. Occasionally, yes.
But you have had students where you wanted to intercede but couldn't?
Yes, but there's other ways to reach out to a student without the therapist or the counseling center professionals going out. Residence life or academic advising or somebody else can reach out in a way that is not considered intrusive.
How well prepared do you feel, and I don't mean to put you on the spot just with your center, but you know, we understand that the Association for University and College Counseling Center Directors found that half the centers felt they could use more hours to respond to community need, for instance. And we understand you have said you have a backlog. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think that's pretty universal, particularly during exams and before finals. The stress goes way up, the sleep goes way down, and students are starting to become overwhelmed. And so the demand on our services spikes. And there's a variety of ways to try to handle it. One is to have a waiting list set up for the non-critical students to try to triage students in, to try to contract for temporary employment with local professionals. But there are budget constraints. And just in that same report, 42% of center directors indicated that their operating budget had declined, and 41% said that it had remained the same while struggling with this increased volume. The struggle is how to hold mental health services together in a way that addresses the urgent conditions that are coming in, but does not at the same time overlook or set aside all of the other garden variety issues that also need our attention and care.
Have you changed anything, or did you, after the Tucson shootings, have students or maybe even professors come to you concerned, more concerned maybe, about their own behavior or someone else's behavior? Did that cause any ripples that you could see from your vantage point as a counselor?
Following this incident, I've seen no change personally. Following the tragedy at Virginia Tech and Northern Illinois, there were spikes in contact from campus community, particularly faculty asking for a consultation or expressing some concern about a student because of their behavior. Not so much like fear about that somebody was an imminent threat, but just genuine concern about their well-being and asking for ideas about how to be supportive and helpful in the classroom.
By the way, if parents discern, wait a second, my kid, he's not making sense, and I don't think it's because he just has his earbuds in all the time, and what do they do? What do you do if you have concerns?
Contact the counseling, the mental health center, if your campus has one. Most county, or many county, maybe most, have outreach mental health professional resources where they can send somebody into the community and do a professional assessment, ask the questions and have a look at and determine whether or not this individual needs further, more intensive assessment. Or
what if that person doesn't want to do it?
There is a process. The language in the laws are slightly different in different states, where a certified individual, a peace officer, a paramedic, a county mental health worker, has the authority to mandate an involuntary psychiatric hold. They're not technically or legally under arrest, but they are required to go under guidance and direction of a law enforcement officer or a paramedic to a mental health emergency room where they will receive professional assessment. And there are legal steps and gates that must be negotiated with the courts and with public defense and mental health assessments to determine if somebody needs to be committed for a longer period of time to become stable and safe.
That's Daniel Hess, Director of Counseling Services at Concordia University in St. Paul, Minnesota. Dan, thank you.
Thank you, Robin.